So I always like to start by thanking the organizers for letting me present here. It's a privilege talking to this group. I am a medical oncologist, work just down the street here at Mass General Hospital. I was told to prepare a talk for non-chemotherapists. And so there are some interesting things going on in sarcomas that I'm very proud to present here. I have to work with a bunch of pharmaceutical companies in order to do what I do, so I have a number of financial relationships to reveal. Just start with a quick case. This is a woman I just saw last week. She presented with flank pain, and a CT scan showed this. The mass doesn't really need to be pointed out, but it's pretty obvious here and here, involving both the kidney on the right as well as the inferior portion of the liver. We completed staging studies with a chest CT scan, and that showed 6 to 9 millimeter bilateral pulmonary nodules where we couldn't really explain it away as being benign. They were a little too small for our interventional radiologists to biopsy, and too small to take her to the OR, so we had to make a treatment decision based on its clinical appearance. And so for a patient like this, I do think about giving chemotherapy for a variety of reasons. One, if those lung nodules do truly represent metastatic disease, then she would be destined to die from this disease. And so chemotherapy would be given for palliative intent. If those lung nodules are benign and she's had them for decades, she still has a very large tumor, which I'm not sure would be grossly resectable. And in that situation, chemotherapy could be used with neoadjuvant intent, which is to chemically debulk the tumor so that she could be made operable if she presents in an inoperable setting. And then the third possible reason, and I'm going to go into this for most of my talk, is adjuvant chemotherapy. So let's just start with palliative chemotherapy. So that's where I give most of my chemotherapy for my patients. And the goals for chemotherapy in that situation is to control metastatic disease. And in doing so, I hope to improve their overall prognosis and survival time. And I hope to improve their quality of life by controlling metastasis. You either ameliorate or put off any symptoms that these metastases can cause by growing, and thereby easing suffering and pain. So the old agents, I started as a medical oncologist here in 2003. And when I arrived, basically we had the same drugs we've been using for the last 30 years. None of them have been confirmed in a randomized clinical trial, and none of them are actually FDA approved at the time for treatment of metastatic soft tissue sarcomas. Doxorubicin is our mainstay of treatment, and often I use it as either a single agent or I think about combining it with either ifosfamide or dacarbazine. My favorite second-line agent is gemcitabine, which I often combine with docetaxel, dacarbazine, or vinorelbine. Any of these agents can be used as single agents, so you can do single-agent ifosfamide or single-agent dacarbazine and single-agent vinorelbine. Docetaxel as a single agent has not really panned out to be very effective, but the combination of the two approach the effectiveness of doxorubicin. The heavy hitter here is the combination of doxorubicin with ifosfamide, or the combination of all three, which is known as the MAID regimen. Although very toxic, that's the regimen that I use if debulking or shrinking the tumor is of primary importance clinically, because the response rate for these two or three drug combination approach 40 to 50%, whereas as a single agent, the response rates are more on the order of 20 to 40%. So those are old agents. And so I showed up as a first-year fellow, and basically we haven't had any new drugs for sarcomas for the past 40 years. And then the last 6 years, we've seen some really significant changes in the landscape of chemotherapy for sarcomas. And so so these are the four agents, and I'll go into it a little bit in detail. So in 2012, the PALET study was a randomized, double-blinded, placebo-controlled phase 3 trial of an oral drug called pazopanib, which is a multi-tyrosine kinase inhibitor, compared to placebo. And this is a graph measuring the progression-free survival rate of our patients. And the cohort that got pazopanib on the average had about threefold longer time to disease progression than patients who got placebo. Notably, when you looked at overall survival, we were not able to see an improvement in overall survival signal. That's largely attributed to the fact that patients who completed this trial would then go on to another line of chemotherapy, and then another line of chemotherapy, and then another line of chemotherapy. On the average, my patients get about 4 to 6 lines of chemotherapy before we ultimately enroll them for hospice. And so those additional treatments, I feel, would dilute out an overall survival signal here. So based on this progression-free survival signal, the FDA granted pazopanib, the first new sarcoma drug to be FDA approved in 40 years. And then in 2016, within a 3-month span, we had 3 randomized trials showing significant benefit with 3 different drugs that really changed my practice pretty dramatically. And so the first of these drugs was a drug called trabectedin, or Yondelis. So this is a randomized phase 3 study where patients were randomly divided into either receiving trabectedin or a more standard chemotherapy called dacarbazine, or DTIC. And in this case, just like pazopanib, we saw significant improvement in progression-free survival, and again, without seeing an improvement in overall survival. And based on this data, trabectedin became FDA-approved for treatment in second- or third-line setting of metastatic liposarcomas and leiomyosarcomas. A month later, eribulin was shown to improve overall survival. So for the first time, we have a drug that actually impacts survival by several months, but clinically significant. And so it was FDA approved for treatment of advanced liposarcomas. In a subgroup analysis, survival benefit did not pan out for leiomyosarcomas. And so the FDA label only applied to liposarcomas. And then importantly, another few months later, we found that combining doxorubicin with a PDGFR inhibitor, olaratumab, was able to almost double the overall survival time compared to patients who received doxorubicin by itself. And so based on this phase 2 study, not even a randomized phase 3, but in a smaller phase 2 study, olaratumab became FDA approved to be treated in combination with doxorubicin as a first-line treatment for metastatic soft tissue sarcomas. Subsequent to this study, a larger phase 3 study was done, and the data from that study is still pending to confirm whether or not these benefits continue to be seen in a larger phase 3 cohort. So turning to whether chemotherapy is useful in the adjuvant setting, we have to be rigorous about thinking about what are the exact goals we want to use? Because these are patients who present with localized disease, and to a large part, their local tumor is then removed. And so when I treat my patients with adjuvant intent, I'm basically treating patients who have no visible disease at the time of chemotherapy. And so I'm really looking to increase their survival. If they can live 5 years without chemotherapy and 9 years with chemotherapy, then I would say I did a good job treating them with adjuvant chemotherapy. And we would presumably increase their survival by either decreasing their rate of distant metastasis or decreasing their rate of local recurrence. But every day I have to keep in mind that these are otherwise healthy people who've had their local tumor removed and have no visible tumor by scans in their body. And so we alluded before that sarcomas come in 55 different flavors. They become adipocytic and become liposarcomas. They turn into bone sarcomas, which we would call osteosarcomas. Smooth muscle becomes leiomyosarcomas. And so how do we deal with all these different histologies? The prior speaker talked about high metastatic potential versus low metastatic potential. And likewise, just as you're more surgically bold with the tumors with low metastatic potential because you have a higher rate of curing them surgically, I become more bold giving chemotherapy to patients with high metastatic potential because I know that without chemotherapy, they have a greater than 50% chance of developing metastasis. And so over a 30-year period, 14 randomized trials have been done comparing patients with locally resected tumors treated with either a doxorubicin-based chemotherapy versus surgery alone. And of these 14 studies, two were significant in showing a survival advantage in favor of chemotherapy. Three of these studies actually found a higher survival in patients who got surgery alone. And the other 9 studies showed no difference in outcome. And here is an example of 7 of these studies. They all used Adriamycin as their main chemotherapy backbone. But the advantages in overall and disease-free survival were at the level of 6 to 13% improvement. And so for that small level of improvement, you really need more than 1,000 patients to be part of your trial in order to show statistical significance. And so there was a meta-analysis done by this sarcoma meta-analysis collaborative group called SMAC, where they combined the individuals from all 14 groups. And they found that if you turn all 14 studies into a 1,500-patient study, you do see significant improvements in local recurrence as well as distant recurrence, and then a marginal improvement in overall survival. More recently, an additional 4 studies were done where they included not only Adriamycin but ifosfamide. And if you repeat the meta-analysis, including these 4 more recent studies, then the recurrence-free survival becomes much more significant. And we have an odds ratio of 0.73 for local recurrence, 0.67 for distant recurrence. And you see more clearly a survival benefit with an odds ratio for death of 0.56. when you include ifosfamide and doxorubicin. And so I do consider adjuvant chemotherapy for my patients. But again, they come in so many different flavors that I have to consider their histology in making my final determination. So the groups that have low sensitivity to chemotherapy, I lean away from giving them chemotherapy in an adjuvant setting. For these groups that are sensitive to chemotherapy, I consider adjuvant chemotherapy a little bit more strongly. And then for this group of patients, I pretty strongly consider chemotherapy. This is a nice report from 20 years ago now, showing back in the 1960s when we weren't using adjuvant chemotherapy, patients with rhabdomyosarcoma, Ewing's, and osteosarcoma were only surviving at a rate of 10 to 20%. And with adjuvant chemotherapy, we were now curing the majority of these patients. In a more recent study where we tried to use histology to really tailor our chemotherapy, the Europeans randomly assigned 287 patients to three cycles of standard chemotherapy, where in Europe they use epirubicin rather than doxorubicin with ifosfamide, and histotype-tailored chemotherapy. And so depending on your histology, they had different chemotherapies that they thought were more attenuated to this type of sarcoma. And they were surprised to find that you actually had a better disease-free survival in the patients who received standard chemotherapy. And so based on this data, this is probably the strongest data to support the use of standard chemotherapy of an anthracycline with ifosfamide in patients with resected sarcomas. But how about retroperitoneal sarcomas? Well, this group in Europe looked at 4,000 patients retrospectively and found that utilization of adjuvant chemotherapy actually had worse long-term survival. This was an American group that looked at the National Cancer Database of 8,000 patients and found that median overall survival for patients who received chemotherapy was 40 months compared to 68 months for people who got surgery alone. And then a final report looks at a 20-year period of 55 patients who had primary high-grade retroperitoneal sarcomas who got chemotherapy and did not show a statistically significant survival advantage to chemotherapy. So the standard of care today is not to give adjuvant chemotherapy for retroperitoneal sarcomas. However, I still feel like there is a strong role for neoadjuvant chemotherapy in order to make inoperable tumors operable. Additionally, like the patient I showed earlier in my talk, we could use chemotherapy as a road test to see if after several months of chemotherapy, if she then developed additional metastatic disease, then we would know that she shouldn't undergo a very large and potentially debilitating surgery. So the take home, currently adjuvant chemotherapy is not standard for retroperitoneal sarcomas. But we do use neoadjuvant chemotherapy to try to downstage locally advanced sarcomas. And the most common indication for chemotherapy is treatment of metastatic disease. I'd like to thank our various centers, including MGH, Dana-Farber, the Connective Tissue Oncology Society, where I was able to get most of my research opportunities and show this data. Thank you.